Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. So it's Monday. I feel we should have a drum roll, but instead we're just going to talk about the week in politics with Ken Rudin, the political junkie. How are you doing?
Good morning, Chris. I don't think we need a drum roll. Maybe taps is what we should be playing, but
well,
I'm not sure.
Let's go right into foreign affairs, because there's a lot happening on the foreign affairs front. We have, let's start off, how did the weekend meeting with the Japanese prime minister go? What's your judgment?
Well, I think everything went well. I think the relationship between the two of them, the president and the Japanese prime minister, went well. But, you know, if you look at the name in the newspaper, it says Shinzo Abe. I think it said Abe Shinzo.
Yes, the
way it is in Japanese. So Donald Trump calls him Prime Minister Shinzo, which is, it's like saying President Donald. You know, I don't think he understood that Abe is his last name and not Shinzo. And so that didn't start off well. But other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? Other than that, I think the two of them got along fine.
But, you know, is there a sense that maybe we're returning to a little more normal relations in Asia? You know, you had this meeting with Abe, and that seemed to go pretty well. And then the phone call with the head of China, and Trump said that he does back the One China policy, sort of smoothing
right.
over the waters.
And not only that, after North Korea launched its ballistic missile test over the weekend, I think there was no outrage and incendiary language, or certainly no incendiary tweet. So, I mean, look, you know, he comes from a certain mindset with outburst and just giving out off his opinion in tweets. But I think, Chris, the examples you show with the Japanese prime minister, with the call to the Chinese head of Chinese state and the reaction to the North Korean missile test, it seems a little more measured and thus good news. Yes.
Okay. So what about Canada? I mean, they're our major trading partner, $545 billion of trade between the U.S. and Canada. Justin Trudeau is coming here to the U.S. What do you expect?
Well, again, I think I expect the same. You know, it's interesting what we saw that how Donald Trump will treat, for example, President Putin, and how he'll talk about Putin with respect in Russia, and yet he'll hang up on a phone call with the Prime Minister of Australia. So, I mean, it's very unpredictable.
Right.
I can no longer predict what's going to happen. I think certainly the relationship with Canada as well as with Mexico is just crucial. But I thought with the most important and the most interesting thing of the week is what's going on with the National Security Council.
Yes.
And the National Security Advisor,
Michael Flynn,
who basically said all along, you know, there were media reports that said that he had talked to the Russian foreign minister or the Russian ambassador to the U.S. before the inauguration, saying that we will talk about sanctions and whether to lift sanctions. He denied that all along. Michael Flynn denied that all along, saying that. He denied it to Vice President Pence, and Pence went out on a limb saying, well, I believe Michael Flynn, because that's what he told me. And then it just so happens that U.S. intelligence agencies may have recorded one of his conversations with the Russian ambassador, and where he did talk about sanctions. So there's a lot of backtracking. Michael Kelly has apologized to everybody. I don't know how many people accepted it. And there seems to be some feeling in the administration that his credibility is seriously, if not irrevocably, damaged.
Well, the White House seems to be letting him sort of twist in the wind. And that's unusual because Trump has gone pretty forcefully to back a number of his people when they've said something controversial or they get themselves in, you know, a little bit of trouble. This time, silence.
You know, you're absolutely right about that as well, because if you're loyal to Donald Trump, he will be very loyal to you. And if you're questionable, as John McCain learned over the weekend, you know, Donald Trump is still calling him a loser. You know, when all the things, if you've ever crossed him in the past, make sure that you're prepared for an attack by him, because you know it's coming. But the president has been quiet. He has not responded to what Michael Kelly may not have done. And while he's obviously inherently loyal to somebody like Michael Kelly, the fact that he may have lied, I'm just saying may have, if he lied to the vice president, that's not a good start. And I think Donald Trump knows that, you know, a suspicious relationship like that is not good for the administration.
Now, one of the things that happened over last week that the business press has been paying a lot of attention to, I'm not so sure about the wider press, but another Federal Reserve governor is stepping down. So Trump is going to have the opportunity to fill 3 seats on the Federal Reserve Board. So how significant do you think this is?
Oh, I think it's tremendously significant. I think the fact is that there are so many people, there are so many positions like that are vacant, that he has the opportunity with his appointments, to completely change fiscal, economic, and foreign policy, domestic policy, all that stuff. But he has to do it. I mean, first of all, he doesn't even have a cabinet, full cabinet yet. There are at least, I think, 8 or 9 or 7 or 8 cabinet members still not confirmed, including the Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of Labor, both of whom are quite controversial. Steve Mnuchin for Treasury, and Andy Puzner for Labor. So there are a bunch of things that the Senate Democrats are trying to hold up on. There are a lot of things to be filled, but once he fills them, and one thinks he will fill them, he has an amazing opportunity to completely change what we've been going through for the last 8 years.
So Mnuchin is going to be confirmed for Treasury Secretary. I mean, that seems to be in...
Obviously,
that's going to happen.
If Betsy DeVos was going to be confirmed, and she had so many strikes against her, if only 2 Republicans would vote no on her, and there seems to be no other more than 2 Republicans, if any Republicans voting against Puzder or Mnuchin or Ben Carson or anybody like that, if Betsy DeVos gets in, then the whole cabinet will get in. But it's certainly the Democrats are trying to look. They've lost the opportunity. They've lost the power to filibuster the nominations, thanks to Harry Reid 3 years ago. So they're doing whatever they can to delay it and postpone it. But until they show they could defeat it, Donald Trump will have the cabinet he wants.
And would this suggest that to the Supreme Court nominee that he's also going to get confirmed?
I think so, too. Matter of fact, Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal announced the other day that Neil Gorsuch told him that the Donald Trump's attacks on the judiciary were demoralizing and, what was the other word, disheartening.
Disheartening, yeah.
So I kind of think that while maybe some Trump loyalists may question what Gorsuch had to say, I suspect it may have even helped Gorsuch's case. Like I noticed that Dianne Feinstein, one of the senior Democrats in the Senate, said that she now looks more favorable on Gorsuch, showing he may be more independent. Now, of course, you know, I mean, there are other Democrats who say I need more than just 2 words to Richard Blumenthal to show me that. But again, you know, I mean, he may not get the 60 votes. So that's the real question. If he doesn't get 60 votes, if they shut down debate, if the Democrats want to filibuster it and they have the right to filibuster it,
right,
Mitch McConnell could do what Harry Reid did and get rid of the filibuster, and then you could confirm him by only 50 plus votes. But I think there's clearly more than a majority that wants to confirm him. The question is whether it goes to 60 votes, or if it's less than that, whether there'll be a fight over the filibuster rule.
Okay, now I want to shift to one of the more controversial issues that's been absorbing the administration and a lot of states and all of us, which is immigration. So a couple of things. First of all, this wall on the border with Mexico, it just isn't going to go away. I mean, the latest estimate that came out, what was almost $22 billion, and Trump tweets out that the price is going to come way down when he gets involved. This isn't going away.
No, it's not going away. And the only thing that's changed since the campaign, of course, is that once upon a time, Mexico was going to pay for it. Now we are going to pay for it.
Yeah.
And Mexico will pay us back. I don't know how that works, but that's exactly that's what the Republican line is, that, you know, it'll get done. But we did see, you know, aside from the rhetoric about the wall, I think more interesting is the fact that there've been hundreds of arrests over the weekend.
Yeah, the deportation rates
around the country. Right, exactly. And look, in fairness, there's a reason why President Obama was called the deporter in chief, because he deported more people here illegally than any other president in history. But Donald Trump has always had the tough rhetoric against people here illegally, people here in the country illegally. He's talked about, you know, mass deportations of 11 million people. He said it can be done. And while that does seem like a bit of a stretch and some of more outlandish thing he has said in the past, the fact that several hundred have been deported or arrested over the weekend seems to be an indication that this policy is now going into becoming a reality and more arrests are likely to come.
Okay, so you think this is more than just business as usual and just the timing because of the, you know, we're a lot going on with immigration. We noticed it. You think this is more than business as usual. This is actually leading toward or signaling a step up.
Well, a step up, absolutely. I don't know ultimately what it means. He's not going to round up 11 million people. But the fact is that whether you like Donald Trump or don't like him or fear what he said or welcome what he said, the fact is, for the most part, except for some of those reversals in foreign policy, Chris, that you said earlier in the show, a lot of what he said he's doing. I mean, on immigration, on trade, on climate change, on oil pipelines. I mean, he said he would do them and he's doing it. And that's the mantra coming out of the Trump administration. He campaigned on these things and he's true to his word.
So I think I'm right. Toward the end of the campaign, when Trump started his campaign, it was a lot about illegal immigrants. And toward the end, there was kind of this blurring of the line between illegal immigrants and just immigrants. And so that's why I got particularly interested with Senator Cotton is coming up with a bill that would cut legal immigration by about half. And he's negotiating with the White House. So do you see activity coming on the legal immigrant front?
Well, you know something, I haven't even thought about that, what Congress may do about the numbers, and that's going to be an interesting thing if that's going to be the change in policy of those here illegally. But Trump has said from the beginning that those who've waited in line, those who followed all the rules, deserve to come here. And I can't imagine the White House reducing the number of people who can come here legally. But again, you know, things are strange. Immigration is probably what got him the nomination, if not the election. And we'll just see how further he takes this issue.
Well, what keeps support of Wall Street behind him is the prospect of corporate tax reform. I think if you boil it down, it's deregulation and corporate tax reform. What's your sense on corporate tax reform? This border tax adjustment, you know, you're getting different lobbying groups being created pro-border tax adjustment, against border tax adjustment. Is corporate tax reform one of those things where there's a lot of enthusiasm, we're going to go for that, and then as reality kicks in?
Well, I'm not sure about reality. That may be reality. Look, we've known for years, and we saw that with the stock market. There are a lot of just businesses who feel that business will be booming, profits will be increasing because of more deregulation from the government on environmental things, on trade, on overseas relationships, all those things. I think the fact is, the feeling is that businesses welcome these deregulations and these reductions in corporate taxes, because that's what Trump promised, that's what his backers want, and that's what he's inclined to do, given the fact that he's a businessman who's chafed over the years of looking at all these taxes put on and regulations put on businesses. So I think it's happening. I don't know how far it is. I don't think it's a bluff. I don't think it's a wish. I think it's a reality, and it may be shocking to some, and it may increase the deficit by a lot. but we'll see where it goes. But I think he's dead set in favor of this happening. And he has a Congress that will back him all the way on it.
So, Ken, I'm kind of curious about your reaction. It was in the Wall Street Journal editorial page over the weekend. There was an article by the conservative columnist Christopher Muth. And he said, look, everyone's getting all worked up about what Trump and what he's doing is a venerable form of leadership. You just sort of get a lot of people who disagree in the room and you just get a lot of ferment. You know, this is what George Washington did. It's not this sort of ideological messaging that people really like, but it's let's have this ferment. So kind of a method to the madness. What do you think?
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think I agree with the fact that it's not ideological, but I don't think it just seems like sometimes his impetuousness, especially when it comes to tweets and not about North Korea, but it's a tweet about invading Nordstrom's or deporting. Yeah, I'm not serious about invading Nordstrom's, but the fact is he'll just conflate, you know, serious.
I can just
policy.
See that one making
exactly,
that phone call.
Right.
Hey, Pentagon.
Right. Or you're right, or deport Meryl Streep. I mean, or, you know, whatever he wants to do. But it seems like, and there was a very good article in the New York Times, I think it may have been yesterday, I don't remember when this happens anymore, but basically they have to react and respond to his tweets and follow government policy because, he, after all, he is the president of the United States. But sometimes there's no conversation beforehand in advance. All it is a tweet, and then everybody has to react. So I've never – look, I know other presidents have had their way of dealing with the public. We know about FDR and his fireside chats.
Right, yeah.
But we've never – but this seems to be look. He's a very impetuous guy. He's been a me first kind of guy without taking instructions from anybody else for so many years. He'll have to learn that there are several branches of government. I mean, it seems to be a shock to him that the judiciary is an equal branch of government. But he will do his attacking and he will do his bad mouthing. But for the most part, until the Republican Congress says no, he's probably going to get his way on many of these issues.
So one last question, which deals with nuclear weapons. And, you know, if you recall back in the 70s and 80s, I mean, nuclear weapons, that was a big deal. Lots of conversation, top of the agenda in terms of foreign policy.
That was everybody's fear, absolutely.
Absolutely. Then it kind of, you know, faded away, and we did these negotiations. And, you know, but recently William Cohn and Bill Perry, I mean, two former heads of the Department of Defense, have been concerned about that we're normalizing nuclear weapons. We're talking about nuclear weapons more as if they're just another weapon. And that Bill Perry, I believe his op-ed was that he thought, he's 89 years old, that he thought, you know, this whole thing about nuclear weapons being used, that, you know, he was going to be able to pass away without that happening. And now he's concerned. What's going on in the nuclear weapon front here?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You have Perry, who was appointed by a Democrat. You have Bill Cohn, who's also actually appointed by Bill Clinton, but he was a Republican senator from Maine. The establishment, the foreign policy establishment, is aghast at the thought of talking about nuclear weapons as if it's a walk in the park. I mean, when Donald Trump said that Japan should have nuclear weapons, when he said, I think apparently he said to Putin that, well, you know, in the nuclear deal, you got the better of it. We have to renegotiate it.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's just like, well, you know, something I'm going to change X, Y, or Z. I'm going to argue on behalf of Ivanka Trump's wardrobe, and we should have more nuclear weapons in this world. It's such a casual treatment of such a serious issue that I think, you know, earlier when I said the Republican Congress will go along with what he says, there are people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, whatever, you know what Trump thinks about them, but they still hold enough weight with such meaty issues as on foreign policy issues as nuclear weapons. I think somewhat, and I think also Jim Mattis, the Secretary of Defense,
right,
is widely respected. He's a widely respected guy who knows his stuff, and I think if he listens to his cabinet at all, if he listens to the leaders in Congress at all, I think he won't be so casual. But right now, Chris, I agree with you. It just seems like a walk in the park talking about nuclear weapons. Astonishing.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to leave it. Thank you very much for your time.
Next week, more astonishing stuff.
Absolutely. Ken Rudin is the political junkie.